as I wait, heart of God.
Hello, New Life, and welcome to the Growth Group podcast, where we believe that spiritual growth happens better in circles than it does in rows. My name is David Haken, and I'm joined by Jonathan Markham, the pastor of New Life Christian Fellowship here in Pacifica, California, and we record these podcasts to help you get the most out of your small group discussion each week. This week, we are starting a brand new series, a new summer series on the book of Deuteronomy. We've been in the New Testament for quite a while, and now we're turning to the pages of the Old Testament and looking at a foundational text for not only the Old Testament, but really all of the Bible, the book of Deuteronomy. So give us some of your thought process, Jonathan, on why you selected this book, kind of how you came to think about it, maybe some resources that pointed you in this direction, and what makes you excited about the book of Deuteronomy.
Well, yes, I am excited about it, David. I know that many people will think, "Oh my goodness me, why would we do such a strange book?" But interestingly enough, when I started looking at the book of Deuteronomy, I learned, which I didn't know at the time, that there are more than 200 references or inferences to the book of Deuteronomy in the New Testament. I mean, it's clearly one of the books that Jesus refers to or infer. I mean,
yeah,
he uses the book of Deuteronomy,
sure,
in his temptations, for instance.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, we're constantly in need of understanding that the Old Testament is not something which we no longer need to take any notice of. It's now just the New Testament. We need to understand how God has, the big story that goes from Genesis right the way through to Revelation. And so recognizing that I stole the title of a book that Philip Yancey wrote, called the Bible Jesus Read.
That's a clever name.
Which is, he writes a whole chapter on the book of Deuteronomy, cool, because of the fact that, you know.
So that title of the book by Philip Yancey, did you say?
Yes.
It was called The Bible That Jesus Read, and did it have different chapters on different Old Testament books?
Yes.
Okay, so you had a chapter on Psalms, a chapter on Isaiah.
I can't remember all the chapters. It wasn't just Deuteronomy.
Okay.
But there was a chapter on Deuteronomy.
All right. Cool.
And of course, and in it, and then you recognize when you look at, you begin to look at it, that Moses took, in a sense, everything that you had that had happened, and summarized it in a charge to the people of Israel, who, as they entered the Promised Land, mm-hmm, as they entered the land where they were supposed to be, the people sent to show the world as it existed then what it meant to serve the one Creator God. That's what they were supposed to do. Now we are called to be the people who are supposed, the people of God, that are supposed to show the world what it means to be followers of Jesus, followers of God, and to live and to live by His standards and by His guidelines. And Moses makes it so clear that all of these guidelines were not the sort of, if you don't do these, you won't be the people of God. He says, this is how God has designed you to be a flourishing nation. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very positive message. And all of those things persuaded me to think, we need to look at this, because there's probably multiple things that will teach us that, okay, maybe our context is very different, but the principles which God calls us to live at, to live out our following of Jesus have a lot of parallels. Mm.
That's neat. Yeah, so you gave me the opportunity to preach the opening sermon in this series.
Yes, and because I know, David, that you have a great passion for seeing the big picture, particularly in the Old Testament. You have a passion for seeing the big picture, how it all fits together, and therefore I knew that you could do this job much better than I could. And so I was really glad when you said that you would do it.
Right after little Philip joined
right.
The church joined, community.
I think he joined our church family a little bit closer to the sermon that you're going to preach than we had originally anticipated.
Right, but
so
you've got it all figured out. Okay.
You had to work hard. Well, our first question, you've entitled Hello, Deuteronomy. Before you began this study, what did you expect Deuteronomy to be about? And list some of the questions you have about Deuteronomy.
Pretty simple question. I mean, what do you know about the book of Deuteronomy before, you know, we start all this? What do you hope to get out of it? But just in general, you can think of Deuteronomy as a sermon that was preached by Moses outside of the Promised Land to that second generation of wilderness wanderers to, like Jonathan just said, encourage them to be faithful to God in light of their calling to conquer and possess the Promised Land. So, yeah, pretty simple question. Just get it out there and see what you guys know and what you're looking forward to learning about this book.
So our second question is entitled Deja Vu. If Christians have enough willpower to struggle their way through Leviticus in their Bible reading plan, their next serious temptation is to skip Deuteronomy, a book which contains many of the laws from Exodus and Leviticus repeated verbatim. Give your best elevator pitch for Deuteronomy. Why should I not skip this book in my reading plan this year?
Yeah, that's kind of funny, because so much of Deuteronomy is, I mean, at least at first glance, kind of a copy of Exodus and Leviticus. There's this portion of Exodus called the Book of the Covenant, which I think is chapters 21 to 24, and it has a whole series of mainly moral laws, and about half of those, I think 50% roughly of those laws that are repeated verbatim there in Deuteronomy, and then many of the laws in Leviticus and other places as well are just found again in what is the largest section of Deuteronomy, 12 to 26. 14 chapters, which is nearly half of the book, and it's right in its center, is just a repetition, seemingly, of some of those laws with some slight adjustments.
So we can give people a little teaser, and that later in the series, David is going to be preaching on those particular chapters and giving us a primer on reading the law, but you have to wait for that.
Yeah. And I'll have to do some reading before I'm ready for it. I'm not, if I was asked to do that tomorrow, I think I'd faint. But Deuteronomy isn't just a repeat. It's an exposition of the law. And you're going to preach this next week, Jonathan. But Deuteronomy 1, verse 5 is really enlightening for this question. It says, beyond the Jordan, in the land of Moab, Moses took to explain this law. That's what he's doing. He's not just repeating it. He's explaining the law that was laid out, given by God in Exodus and Leviticus. Because in those books, Exodus and Leviticus, what we have is God speaking to Moses. But in Deuteronomy, we have Moses speaking to the people. And it's not even God speaking through Moses in this case. It's simply Moses exhorting the people to obey God.
And you can see, can't you, as you go through, there are places where Moses simply repeats, as you say, but then there are places where he particularly, there's a contrast between the first three chapters and then when he launches into his exposition in chapter 4.
It's and
very
as far
obvious
as like the
there.
Repetition there in the first three chapters, it's not necessarily like, let's just go over the story again. But like as you were talking about the significance of the covenant, and that piece is really crucial to a covenant document, a covenant agreement starts with, like, let's go over the history between the covenant partners. What's our relationship? What has the benefactor in this relationship done for the person that he's seeking to serve?
Right.
So that's laid out in those chapters.
Which I think probably
is a good
takes us to, did you give your elevator pitch for Deuteronomy there, David?
I think so. You guys can probably pick and choose from some of those things that we've thrown out there, the piece
because that really sort
together.
Of takes us to the to our third question, which is look-alike. We learnt on Sunday that the covenant laid out in the book of Deuteronomy was modeled upon after ancient Hittite suzerain vassal treaties.
Yeah.
I think you're going to need to explain
them. Yeah, right.
Suzerain vassal treaties. You're going to need to explain that a bit in the middle. But the question goes on, which contain the following parts: preamble, historical prologue, general stipulations, specific stipulations, blessings and curses, document clause, and witnesses. God could have chosen any mechanism to describe his relationship with his people. Why choose this one? What do geopolitical peace treaties and foreign policy documents have in common with the way God relates to man?
That is about a mouthful and a half, I think.
That certainly is, but
right.
You wrote it.
Yeah, so it's my fault. I mean, it's interesting. So this discovery of a parallel in form between the Book of Deuteronomy and these ancient documents that have been dug up in central Turkey was a 19th century discovery, I think. 19th or 20th, really late, mm-hmm. that we kind of realize, wow, there's a almost exact parallel between some of the pieces we see in Deuteronomy and then some of the pieces we see in these, like I said, treaties, Hittite treaties. So the Hittite Empire is like I said, in what is modern-day Turkey and stretching east into Syria. They're north of Palestine. And there was some interaction between the Hittites and Palestine and Hittites, and then down into Egypt as well, and Assyria even farther to the east. And, you know, it was a literate nation, and they did a lot of writing, cuneiform scripts, and the writing that they, some of the documents that they would compose would define relationships between themselves and other national entities, other small kingdoms. And when there was something, a definition that they wanted to put in place between nation A and nation B, like this is how we're going to define our relationship, whether it's monetarily or after some kind of battle, there would be one of these suzerain vassal treaties that they would put down. And these treaties would all have the exact same form. So in my sermon, you'll hear me reference the high school essay. An essay which has a very common, predictable form, which starts with an introduction that has a thesis in it, and then there's body paragraphs and a conclusion, and you're like, you kind of know where you are when you're in a high school essay. The same thing would be true for these treaties, has these forms, which seven parts. And Deuteronomy, you can pick out those parts in the same order as well. So,
and the suzerain was the
what's a vassal?
Yeah, the suzerain was the kind governing.
Yeah. So you think of maybe suzerain as an emperor and a vassal as like an under king.
Right.
So it's like a big king and a small king. So the big king hasn't necessarily conquered and annexed and completely taken over this other kingdom. It's just a tributary, I suppose, of that larger
right.
kingdom. So yeah, the question then becomes, man, why the heck did Deuteronomy adopt this form? Because we know that these treaties existed before the Exodus, so clearly it was you know, Deuteronomy copying the Hittites, the Hittites copying Deuteronomy. So yeah, what we're going to kind of discuss together in this question is why? Why would Deuteronomy be modeled after some of these treaties? And there I can give you some suggestions to think about. I think perhaps the best one is what Jonathan said at the beginning of his kind of purpose statement for our series in Deuteronomy. That we are kind of a covenant people called to be on mission. I think that's really interesting as one nation has a relationship with another nation, describing its purpose or orientation to that other larger nation as our orientation towards God. But yeah, just like these treaties are between political rulers or officials, between kings, so it helps us see that God wants to display himself and wants others to see him as a king, and that we, as those who are made in his image, are to be rulers ourselves. So I think that there's a parallel there.
And there's privileges and responsibilities.
Absolutely.
Of that relationship. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, we're going to begin to see that God is giving his people, and therefore us, a relationship of love and care which have privileges and responsibilities.
Yeah, a relationship of love. That's an interesting word. So in these Hittite documents, you'll find the word love used all over the place, which you wouldn't, you know, expect to see between some kind
really,
of...
Really? That's like, interesting.
Yeah, between some kind of relationship or document between, I don't know, the monetary import-export stuff between U.S. and Mexico or something like that. But the word love is used, and it's like saying that I, the great Hittite emperor, am calling on the Egyptian pharaoh to love me and my nation by this or this or this. So the word love isn't purely like emotional, but it's kind of a loyalty, allegiance term. Mm. And I think that there some of that is, you know, is should be translated into our idea of love as well, or covenant love.
Yeah, if we don't realize that we should have an allegiance to our Creator, which is because so often our relationship is either one of fear, or one of that sort of loosey goosey, and you know, it's all about love, that love includes has a very robust and strong aspect to it.
Right, robust, and it's expressed through actions.
Right.
Which, I mean, the New Testament, Book of John, in 1 John, it's like, those who love me will obey my commandments.
Right. And we're going to see that Moses repeats multiple times, hear, learn, do.
Yeah.
Listen to what I'm saying, learn what I'm saying, teach it to other people, and then do.
That's neat. I'm looking forward to seeing that pattern.
Our last question talks about, because you've already said, David, as you've already said, this book is a book of Moses preaching, Moses sermons. And so you've entitled the last question, Moses the Preacher. Retrace the 40 years leading up to Moses' sermon in the plains of Moab, opposite the Jordan River, outside the Promised Land. This generation of wilderness wanderers stared across the Jordan at what must have seemed like an impossible task. How would a knowledge of the past, Deuteronomy 8, and the promises of the future give them and us courage in the present to be fully devoted followers of Yahweh?
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting about just Israelite history as it's described or prophesied in Deuteronomy is that everything in their life was contingent upon the spiritual health of their relationship with God. So if the rain was falling down, their crops were growing, if enemy nations were held at bay, it was because they were fully devoted followers of Jesus, of Yahweh, of their God.
Yeah.
But if there was syncretism, if there was idolatry, then you could expect to find famine and pestilence and mean neighbors knocking at your door. That was like the weather system, the ecosystem over Israel operated under different laws than it did next door in Iran or wherever. Because of this covenant that God specifically placed himself under with Israel. So what does that mean but that God is a promise-making God and a promise-keeping God?
Mm.
So we can rely on him to keep his promises, and if we look at those promises that he's made, that they should be a source of encouragement to us, because we know that they're bedrock.
Right. It's interesting, isn't it? The way in which we see God, in a sense, growing up his people. Very soon you're going to experience the fact that little Pip will expect you to tell him what you're going to do for him, and when you tell him you're going to do for what you're going to do for him, he will expect you to do it. And in a sense, it becomes a very, initially a very simple transactional relationship. And in a sense, God here is beginning to develop what a relationship with the people, with a very simple, in a sense, transactional relationship. As you say,
blessings and curses.
Blessings and curses.
Yeah.
They were very straightforward. But as the relationship of the human race with the Creator, God has given us more information. He's given us more examples. He's shown us more and more. The relationship becomes much more complex as a child's relationship to the world becomes much more complex. And God is in a sense less simplistic in the way he treats us.
I mean, Galatians speaks about the law as a tutor, which a child would have before he grows into
exactly
maturity. That's an interesting concept.
And but you know, and so it's that's, and I mean, that's one of the reasons why I think, going back to what we said right at the beginning, that it's really important for us to look at this, because you know, sometimes we forget what we learned as children. And Jesus says, sometimes, unless you come to me as a little child, we recognize that the consistent faithfulness that a child simply expects from their parents, we are to simply expect from God. To remember that's the reliability that we, even though the whole of the world around us has got so complex, we can depend on that relationship, mm-hmm. In that way.
Right, and that's what the prophets hope for, that's what they look to, even after the failure of Israel.
And we're going to see so much of that. We're going to see lots of really exciting things that God says, that it's, you know, that shows how much God loves and cares for his people, and wants them to flourish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Deuteronomy is really a beautiful book. So where it's kind of a frequent comment that you have about the books of the Bible, where you wish that they said more about this story or that story. Deuteronomy is one of those books that it actually does comment. It goes back and it makes those evaluative comments on past stories, and like, this is why this happened and this and that way, which I think is
it's just another thing that underlines the fact that God in the pages of Scripture, God tells us everything he knows we need to know, rather than everything we would like to know.
We'll have to wait until the other side to find out those answers.
Well, I hope that you're going to really enjoy this series, that, you know, both David and I are going to participate in. And I trust that, you know, we're going to really have our lives as followers of Jesus enhanced by seeing all that he did for the people of Israel. So next week we'll be looking at the first three chapters. So we'll see you then.
As I wait, heart of God, satisfied. Sustain.